Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 122. My name is John Morgan. Cold coffee is with me. Let me just give it one of these. That was kind of weak. It kind of.
It was.
I meant to pop it.
That's a Sprite that you're partaking in right
Oh,
there.
No, sir. That is a Frosty award-winning Pabst Blue Ribbon. My friend, it is nearing 3 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning, the night after UFC 214. And I tell you what, man, it's been a crazy week, man. First week ever, we were damn near in jeopardy of not having a show.
I know. Even now, I was like, can't we just, like, sleep?
Okay. I actually
was going to try to postpone it until tomorrow again, just for the fact that it's, like, literally, we got to head to the airport in less than 3 hours.
That's crazy. We're going to leave in 2.5 hours. But my dad and my stepmom are in town in Vegas. My wife and kid are back from visiting family in Texas. So that would make me a horrible person if I was to duck out. But I tell you what, man, I felt really guilty that we didn't get our show done on Thursday.
I don't know if anybody would blame you.
My family doesn't even like me. They don't care. No, I tell you what, you know, it was funny because we didn't get the show done on Thursday, and I directly blame the UFC for that. No disrespect to the UFC, but they loaded the schedule, man. They did an open workout and an Ultimate Media Day on the same day. So we ended up talking to, I believe, 18 different fighters in one day. Didn't even leave the UFC gym where I was at until like 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And we just completely ran out of time. There was just no time to do it. Unfortunately, this is our pet project, and our boss, Dan Stupp, just happened to be in town. So I think if for us to just be like, hey, bro, back up. We got to do a little something for us.
Mm-hmm.
Probably wouldn't work out real well. But
yeah, maybe not.
I tell you what, it was funny because a lot of people hit me up and were like, where's it at, bro? Where's it at? And I felt bad. You know, I felt bad.
I felt like
we didn't deliver. I felt like we didn't deliver.
That's not Cold Coffee's fault.
But it also
felt
kind of good.
That's J-Mo's fault.
It also felt kind of good to know that they missed it.
That's true. Thank you all. Thank you. Thanks, Mom, for being upset about not getting the podcast.
It was just pretty much my mom.
Your mom, my mom.
So when I say a lot of people, it was my mom and your mom.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about it, though. We had to get together tonight or early this morning as the sun's going to be rising pretty soon. But UFC 214 is in the books. John Jones is, again, the UFC light heavyweight champion. Everything is right in the world again, I guess. The reign of Bones is back in effect. Cold coffee, man. I got to say, I was impressed by John Jones tonight. And I will say this. I was impressed by Daniel Cormier. I thought Daniel Cormier did everything that he said he was going to do. He started quick. He kept the pressure on, nonstop forward movement, throwing bombs, doing pretty much what I think you have to do to beat John Jones, which is pressure him, but don't let him get a hold of you. Don't let him clinch you. But just stay like right inside in the pocket and stay in that boxing range. And I thought Cormier fought a pretty damn good fight.
Yeah.
But John Jones just once again showed why he's John Jones.
Why he's John Jones, yeah. Jones looked incredible. I thought his poise and just his strikes, I thought he was crisp. He still had that oblique kick, or I think that you call it. You know, he was still bringing that out, and, you know, Daniel was coming right through it. But I thought Daniel was striking. He made some really good contact, and of course, John shrugged it off like it was no big deal.
Right?
But Daniel dropped some bombs on him. No, I thought Daniel did great. I thought he looked really, really poised. He didn't look to be too over emotional going into it. He wasn't rushing into things, you know. I thought he maybe could have pulled the trigger on trying to get some takedowns more.
Yeah.
He didn't seem to be doing a lot of attempts, but John's so quick with those knees. He was catching Daniel in
big
the stomach.
Knees.
Catching him all over the place, so I think he was, you know, a little bit wary of, you know, taking too many attempts and catch one of those. But honestly, I think if there was anything that maybe he did get out of himself a little bit, you know, and maybe get away was the fact that I think he wanted to knock Jones out.
Yeah, he did.
He didn't just want to take him down and grind him. And I think if he would have got over that moment of just really wanting to have that knockout, he probably would have attempted more takedowns. So I thought that was one instance where maybe the emotion did get to him. But I thought he was pretty composed. I thought they had a really good game plan. I thought he was executing great. Just Jones looked really, really good.
Almost like he hadn't had any time off at all.
Yeah. I mean, the improvement on his side. I mean, Daniel improved immensely. And I think Jones even – I don't know if he did it in his post-fight show, but I know that if we would ask him now – the improvement that he saw in Daniel, because all the way leading up, he was like, I don't think Daniel's changed. I don't think he's improved.
Mm.
I think he would easily admit at this point, you know, that Daniel did change.
It's a
you
good
know,
question. Daniel, I didn't touch on that. I didn't.
I don't
about,
think anybody.
I don't
did.
Think he did. But you're right. If he's being honest, he has.
I think he would have said for sure that DC changed. That was a different DC than what we saw before, and I think that shows. It showed in the emotion that you saw from DC afterwards, kind of, you know, crying in the ring a little bit. I mean, he put everything into it. I mean, this has been a man that's been so uber focused on one thing, and that's been beating John Jones. And to not have that happen and pretty much, I guess, showing his mind that that was it. That was the second time, you know. Rogan was like, oh, you know, talk about the rivalry, you know, and he's like, it's not,
oh,
much,
that's
of a,
heartbreaking.
Not much of a rivalry if you got beat both times, yeah. You know. It showed that he really had put a lot of heart and soul and effort into it, you know, and it was sort of crushing to see that, you know, and I know a lot of people in the back that were rooting for DC really felt for him, but I'm sure they were still very happy for Jones. To see him get back on top, because he's been quite a few things as well. I mean, this was quite a story for him. I mean, he really, you know, he messed up a lot, yeah. And he was at the lowest of lows, and to see him back on top. And I love the humility towards the end where he said he, you know, still had to take it day by day. You know, this is still, his life is still a work in progress, you know, that he's got to kind of keep in check. And I thought that's a great sign of this new John Jones, hopefully, just like what we saw different skills out there. Maybe not different, but he looked so sharp. He looked focused. And I think if he takes that same focus into make sure he's doing the right things in life to be a good role model, to be a good champion, then that's good. It's good for the sport.
DC, as much as he's not necessarily loved by fans, it seems like he gets booed a whole hell of a lot. I think he's really loved behind the scenes by media. By
there are a lot of DC chants. I could even hear them in the back.
Well, there were more than normal. You're right. Yeah. There more, and I think that's because he was fighting John Jones, which is obviously a polarizing guy. But you know, he does have a lot of fans in the media, and just he's a good dude, man. He's actually a really good dude. It was kind of a, I mean, how funny was it that last night, Thursday night, or Friday night, I should say. The first ever Mixed Martial Arts Journalists Association meeting was held at Roy's Hawaiian Cuisine restaurant down there, and it just happened to end up being the same place that Daniel Cormier was having his, you know, post weigh-in meal, and he finds out that all of us are out there, and the guy comes out there and actually spends, you know, 10 minutes or whatever it was, saying hello to everybody and kind of giving us a little rundown on his plan for the morning and where it was weighing and all that. I mean, the guy didn't have to do that, you know what I mean? But he's always been good like that. And so I think there were a lot of people pulling for him. And I didn't think Daniel Cormier had anything to hang his head about, man. I really didn't. It was close two rounds to start with. I actually had the first round for John Jones. I had the second round for Daniel Cormier, but just narrowly. And it was really because of, as you said, the heavy shots, man. I felt like he was landing the better punches. Even though John was doing pretty well, I felt like Cormier had the better shots, and he was moving forward. So I had it even going into third round. Kevin Ioli was actually sitting right next to me of Yahoo, and he had it two rounds to none for Daniel Cormier.
Really?
There was actually one judge that had it two rounds to none for John Jones. So it just goes to show you, I think, how close the fight was. And then John Jones comes out and lands the high kick. And I won't say the fight was over at that point, but Cormier was out on his feet at that point.
He was.
And just, you know, trying to right himself, and Jones hit him with the sweep and then hit him with the flying knee that kind of like pushed him to the ground, and then the big punches on the ground. And I thought John McCarthy, I don't say let it go too long, but definitely like he gave him every opportunity to try to get back in there.
He certainly didn't cut it short, you know. And I think, you know, if he would have, you know, stopped it three or four strikes earlier, you know, there definitely would have been calls that it was maybe a little bit earlier. I think we all realized that it was done, but it didn't feel like, as I'm watching it, I had that dialogue in my head of, oh, okay, it's a championship match. You know, you gotta let it go a little bit longer. Let him see if he's gonna recover. And there was that moment where, you know, he was kind of not, he wasn't quite flopping yet, and he looked like he was gonna get up. And then at one point, he just sort of flopped down. And he wasn't doing anything. And I think that was the final key. It was just like, okay, stop it. But I mean, in a championship fight like that, you gotta
a grudge match,
yeah. Especially
and number
like
one
that.
Versus number two in the world, you know, not just a title fight.
Yeah, and it's funny because I mean, Johnny, he was pretty reserved, and I think in a lot of his strikes, especially. So when he got him hurt and got him down, he ramped it up a notch, and
right.
they were, and he was really teeing off. I mean, he was he was making contact. He wasn't missing, so everyone was pretty much causing significant damage on Daniel. And at that point, and you saw afterwards, Daniel was out and didn't even realize that he was knocked out.
Yeah, it was funny because I was looking up, and there were a lot of people in the cage, and then when they got cleared up, one of the first things I saw was, John McCarthy was trying to bring him to the center to hold, and Daniel pushed him a little bit, and push is probably the wrong word. It was more of those get off me type of things because he was just trying to grab his wrist for the.
Yeah, I saw that. He just got it looked, to me on TV. It looked like it was more one of those just like
yanked
his
away.
Arm away. Yeah.
I think, but and then we heard from Dana White afterwards that he was saying that he thought the fight was stopped early. Just goes to show. I mean, he just wasn't there. I mean, he was hurt bad and wasn't there. And then you mentioned it, man. The emotion afterwards, dude. Just seeing the honesty come out. The tears come out. That's difficult. And I will say, I'm glad they didn't bring him to the post fight press conference. I think. As great as he is and as awesome as he is in front of the camera, that was just such an emotional loss, and it was obviously to be knocked out. I got to say, man, is that weird to me? I'm kind of glad that he didn't have to come and kind of pour his guts out.
Well, no, because he would have, but, he was knocked out. He pretty much was probably concussed severely, and you don't need to do that. And I thought it was interesting to hear from Dana that, they had made the call to not interview him right there.
There's some
and
confusion
Joe still
there, right?
went and did it.
But then Joe kind of made it sound like he was being forced to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. Was wondering, to me, when he asked the question they did and then stopped, made it seem weird because I was just like, that's it? You're going to interview him and then you're going to do that? So I don't know if somebody was talking in his, chirping in his ear like, all right, hey, no, stop. We don't need to do
Might
this
be
anymore.
Right.
And maybe that's
I'm
why
sure
he cut
it off.
I'm sure
he'll clarify on his podcast because
it's just
kind of
weird.
Confusing.
Yeah, it was kind of weird how it just stopped how it was because I think Daniel definitely had more he wanted to say. And at that point, if you're going to let him talk, you might as well
get it all out.
Let him, have more of a platform for it. But and especially it seemed like Daniel and them were into it once he wanted to talk or made it mention that he seemed like he wanted to have something to say, and I'm sure he wanted more than that one question that he got asked. But
you think DC fights again?
It's tough because
he's got the broadcasting gig.
You can't. And that's the thing. He's plenty of fine without it. I mean, at this point, he gets to be like, I hate to say it, like with Joby and DJ. Nobody's clamoring to want to see the third fight. If it looked like this was a even though DC did better, it looked like Jones handled it pretty easily. I don't want to say easily.
And this is a Jones coming off time off.
Yeah.
With question marks.
I think most people think that it would happen again, but also with DC and what he did, you don't want to see him drop too far down. But, I've been thinking that this guy probably only wanted maybe 2 to 3 more anyways, And, he said he would give John one more shot if he beat him, and then he'd be done, mm-hmm. So I think he's already kind of wrapping it up in his head, and he's getting older. But you're right. He doesn't need to punish his head. He's got a great analyst job that he could be doing. Might as well, keep those brain cells and everything going and firing on there. Other things going on.
I was going to say, if he wants to fight, he could move up to heavyweight and give himself some fresh matchups, some fresh names.
Yeah.
Probably wouldn't be as tough on his body to keep his weight down. I know he doesn't want to get in the way of his buddy Kane, but, he could slide down a little bit down the rankings and find somebody down there. If he wants to stay at light heavyweight, the Jimmy Manoa fight, remember they had a little bit chirping going on back and forth. Jimmy lost, of course, to Volkanovski, so maybe that's something you could do. But, he made $1 million disclosed for this fight tonight, and Dana White says it was trending over 1 million pay-per-view buys. I know that sounds like a little bit of a surprise to people, but we can just say the trends that we saw, it must have been very popular tonight because our traffic was phenomenal. So you got to think he's getting a little bit more money, a couple more million on the side.
Right, and by the way that John's reaction, too, when he heard the number, I don't know what any sort of dolly value was.
What the
but
kicker
he,
was.
He seemed pretty excited
he
about it.
He seemed pretty thrilled. So we'll see. It wouldn't shock. I'm not saying, and I don't want it to sound like I'm saying Daniel needs to go away. I'm just saying it wouldn't shock me because he does, from what we understand, make pretty good money doing the broadcasting gig, and why not keep doing that? As you said, I think the only thing he really cared about was beating John Jones, and when that didn't happen, I don't know what else would motivate him. All right, John Jones, let's talk about John Jones. We know how great he is. I want to ask you about his post-fight, not the call out of Brock Lesnar, but first the comments about Daniel Cormier. Taking a moment to really say something, and I got to say – it felt sincere to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but it felt honest.
No, that was that was in fact the word I was going to use. It seemed real, and it was I don't know. I mean, I hate to think that it's just the fact that John's used to kind of putting a good face forward and then going out and being the bad boy and saying one thing and doing another thing. And I don't want to chalk it up to him just being a good actor. You know, I know we've seen that in the past that he's done that. It did. It felt sincere. And if it is an act, good job, fella. You got a future in some movies and stuff because you sold me on it. I mean, I believed that he really did feel something for Daniel and what Daniel brought it, you know. And I mean, he'd been calling him a fake champion, all this other stuff, all this up to this point, and then for him to say that Daniel will be a champion forever going forward, you know.
That's classy.
I thought that was really nice. I mean,
super classy, because he said at that May press conference, you know, I was the one that asked him, you know, John, you see that belt over there, is that the real belt? And he says, hell no, that's not the real belt, that's my belt. But we get it, man, that's pre-fight talk too, you know what I mean? So to come back after the fact and be like, no, brother, hold your head high, man, I screwed up. You were the real champion, and we'll leave it at that. You know what I mean? Like, I thought that was really classy. And I know that at the moment that those words probably didn't do much to help Daniel Cormier, but I think
– They will.
They will. I think they will. And John echoed him again at the post-fight press conference. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yep.
But what you did say – one thing you did say that – and again, I'm not trying to take away from John Jones after I just finished praising him, but – you know, you saw during the post-fight press conference, Denise White, who is his, you know, crisis management specialist over there, the woman who came after at UFC 200 and was like, you all know
who I am.
And we're like, no, none of us do. But she was standing right there at the edge of the stage listening to everything. And she's been there with John all week long listening to what he says. It's obvious that he is well-coached at this point, right? I mean, it's obvious that he is well-trained. You know, she is obviously teaching him how to handle things better in the eye of the public. But, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? If you're just saying the right things. I mean, I don't think he's lying. I don't, you know, I think maybe he's just learning how to phrase things a little bit better. And, hell, just growing up a little bit. And, let me say this. And he touched on it a little bit in the post-fight press conference. Well, if you want to watch the whole thing, we've got the whole thing archived on YouTube. You can check it out. But, you know, he touched on the fact of Conor McGregor and how Conor McGregor is doing these things and making this money. And I think that's it more than anything. I think John Jones realizes, like, dude, I have an opportunity to make this $70 million paycheck, $100 million paycheck. You know, maybe it's not boxing Floyd Mayweather, but maybe there's entertainment for me or whatever it may be. But I don't get a shot at any of that if it goes away. So, I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is, I do think he is more mature. I'm not saying his character has totally changed, but I do think he's growing up a little bit and realizing, like, dude, there's possibility of great things if I don't F myself in the process.
That's true. I mean, and it sucks that it took what it did to get to that point, because, I mean, he had quite the possibility to make all that kind of money when he did it before. I mean, he was just younger, and I don't want to say dumber. I think just having fun without thinking of the ramifications like a young man will do. I mean, here's a guy that he's got brothers in the NFL, you know, he's, you know, living high on the horse. You know, I'm not sure of how humble the beginnings were, you know, from all I can remember, they were humble beginnings.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they were like, you know, living in cardboard boxes, but they weren't, you know.
They weren't going to soup kitchens or anything,
right.
You know, but, you know, good for him to get to the point of what he's done, but I think it happened so quick that, you know, I think all of us could be guilty of doing the same sort of things. Maybe not to the extreme that Mr. Jones did it, but you never know.
I do dumb shit now and I'm 39 and broke. If I was 23 and rich, I'd do some dumb shit.
That's true. That's true. But, yeah, I mean, he did seem more mature. He seemed that he had really sort of taken heart of a lot of the stuff leading up to this moment, you know. And he seemed grateful, but, you know, I remember feeling that way before, too, when he said it, and he said he came back. But am I fooling myself when I'm like, oh, I really want to believe it this time? He sold it. He made it really good. But if anything, if just looking at the body of work that you could tell that he had put himself through to perform how he did, he had a lot of motivation, and that a lot of motivation takes a lot of belief and a lot of, you know, self-sacrifice, and maybe doing that for this, you know, maybe he did decide I'm ready to give up a lot of those things so that I can get back on the right track, because I think he wants to be the kind of champion that, you know, and this could be partly could do be due to some of the stuff that Daniel said. You know, Daniel's always said, you know, I didn't do this. I didn't throw my life away. I didn't what it is. I'm the champion that you should be, you know, wanting to cheer for. You know, you're booing at me and stuff. And I figured that was the only other little touch that would have really set it over the edge. You know, when he said all the right things about Daniel and want to be a champ, that, you know, if he would have said something like, I'm going to be a champion that you all can respect. You know, I want to be a champion like Daniel's been doing, you know, say something along those lines. But he didn't get there, but I was like, oh, that would have pushed it over the edge. But
that was the theater major in you right there. Yeah, like, right? Looking for the perfect story.
I had the perfect story ending. But I want to believe that he is ready to do all these things. And you know, shame on me if it comes down the line, but he came across as sincere, and that's enough to have me buy into it. And why shouldn't I? Because he seems that he's put in the work, so I think he believes it. I think he wants to do that. It sucks he's still got a crisis person around, because it makes it sure that he's not quite sure of it right now. So we still got to have somebody there to watch what he's saying. I hate to think that he's just been so well coached for this moment, you know. I want to believe that it's all good, and so I'm willing to believe it, and until he proves me wrong, I'm all in for him being the new better role model, hopefully, version of Jon Jones as a champion.
I don't think that he's necessarily like entirely changed as a person. I don't think people necessarily do. I mean, he even said in the press conference, he's like, at the end of the day, I'm still a wild motherfucker, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's true. The thing is, I think he's mature enough now to realize that his actions have consequences.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, dude, as a fighter, boy, I'll be interested to see what we do with the rankings this week, because we've had DJ sitting in that number one pound-for-pound spot. Now, Gorgeous George Garcia is the one that kind of heads up our rankings committee, but we all have some edge, you know, some input in there.
You still got to leave DJ.
Still leave DJ? You don't put Jon Jones back at number one pound for pound?
What is he right now, number two?
Yeah.
I'd say you leave him at two. Let him have another incredible performance like right now. I thought what he did today was nothing short of just fantastic, you know, but you can't take away the fact of what DJ's dominance, and DJ hasn't done anything wrong. It's not like he's put on any bad performance. He still gets better and better every time. And I think when we saw Jones come back before with OSP, it was like an off fight. Mm-hmm. When was the last time you saw DJ slide back? He hasn't slid back in any of his recent.
Fair point.
In any
it
of
seems
his
like
recent
he gets better
defeats.
Every time.
He gets better every time. And we saw a better Jon Jones. But let's see what happens in the next one. Let's see how it goes. And if he gets back to dominating how he is, then, yeah, I think just in the sheer terms of excitement, it'd be hard for people to keep having a smaller weight class, especially now. It seems he's picking these fights, you know, that maybe make him look better. I think you'll start losing public favor when you start picking, I don't want the tough guy that really could make the weight and whatever, you know, like especially like TJ. Let's keep the Ray Borg.
Right.
Most people, I think that's a much safer bet. And I think if you just start doing a bunch of safe bets, which DJ has never done at this point, DJ's like, just bring them on down. They make it in my division, we'll do it, you know. But I just think just with this one performance, you can't take away from DJ right now, I think.
Did you pick up on Jon Jones talking about Brock Lesnar and then talking about Stipe Miocic and basically saying, well, I'd only go up to heavyweight if it's a preferable matchup for me.
Yeah.
And he kind of saved it because he's like, well, nobody knows who Stipe is. And that sounds rude, but it's kind of true. You know what I mean?
To a degree. I can see where Stipe would be like, you know,
that was
yeah, or just saying, F you, that was probably true like a year and a half ago. But now you see the dude hanging out with the Indians. You see him hanging out with
the Cavs.
I mean, the guy's getting around. I mean,
I
think he's even done some talk show circuits or whatever. Is he as engaging or as galvanizing of getting people behind him like a Brock Lesnar? Hell no. But now if you're in the day and age where he quoted, you know, he was really respecting the fact that, you know, what Conor's done. So, I mean, he's shooting for the moon. And so at this point, if he's going to try to pick these big fights, I just hate it.
Basically, at the same time, I was like, well, I think it's an easy fight. He's like, stylistically, I think I could beat him is pretty much what he said.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, don't say that.
But, you know, but yeah. It's true, but I don't think it would be as easy as he thinks it'll be.
I'd be a big man. It's funny because I just said last week I don't even give a shit about watching Brock Lesnar fight again. all right, if you get John Jones and you know Brock Lesnar's got to get over suspension and do all that, I'm not going to lie. I'd probably be pretty excited about John Jones, Brock Lesnar.
I'd be excited. I want to see if he'd be able to throw throw Brock around like he was able to kind of manhandle Daniel when they got into the clinch and stuff. He seemed like the stronger guy. And Daniel normally when he gets in these clinches just manhandles guys. I mean, but I think the only real sort of throw or takedown was from Jones taking down Daniel. So it'd be interesting to see if you could try to do that because Brock is a big, big
a
man.
A large man.
And, you know, he's much bigger than what Daniel is. And it'd be interesting to see. But, I mean, who
it's
would,
still fantasy for right now, right?
It
Brock's
is.
Still retired.
Who,
he's still got USADA to deal
with. Who wouldn't
want to
see – I mean, Brock, I mean, who wouldn't want to see him get fucked up, you know?
Here's your last time ever in MMA, bro. Let's show you what the new generation's all about.
Yeah, right?
All
right,
well, I got to get a cold frosty beverage. It's too late. It's been too long of a week.
It has been late.
All right, so while I grab that, let's do a little bit of John Jones.
How are you guys?
Good. John, clearly a long journey for you to get back to this moment. We could see the emotion immediately after in the cage, but you've had a little chance to let it soak in. I'm sure spend some time with your family. What are the emotions like right now?
Man, it's surreal. It's surreal to be back here in front of you all. Just more grateful than ever. You know, at one point in my career, just took it all for granted and just, you know, I was just dreaded doing some things like this. And now after not having it and realizing how easily it could be all gone, not having this, I'm more grateful for every ounce of this process.
Incredibly quick start to the fight tonight. Were you anticipating it to be, you know, that much of a barn burner right off the bat?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, I heard Daniel say things like he wanted to show me right away that you know, the 2 years will affect me and that I'm not meant to be here and things like that. So we knew that we knew there wasn't going to be a filling out process. We knew there wasn't going to be time for ring rest. We knew we were going to have to get straight to business, and that's what happened.
You said you were going to get the finish. I mean, did you envision that type of knockout, you know, a high kick, you know, finishing it the way you did? Did you see that as a possibility?
Yeah, we expected to finish Daniel Cormier. I said it in several interviews before the fight. There was a day in practice where we found five other guys who gives me the hardest time, and my coaches made me match up against all of them. They had one round each and five rounds, and I finished three out of the five, which is something I have never been able to do before. I had two TKOs and a submission. And my coaches told me after that practice, they said, John, you are stepping into your prime, my friend. And they said it's time for you to expect to finish fights, expect more out of yourself, both in your personal life and at work. And that's what I've been doing. I've been expecting more out of myself, holding myself to a higher standard. And I feel like it showed tonight.
Very classy address towards Daniel afterwards. I wonder, was that spontaneous or was it something that's been weighing heavy on you that you wanted to get out there? I mean, obviously, pre-fight buildup isn't exactly the time to do that, but
right.
Was that something that just came to you all of a sudden, or had you wanted to get that out there?
Well, I've always felt that way about Daniel, but it was spontaneous. I've always felt like he's a pretty classy guy, guy to be respected. Stand-up champion, model champion. Unfortunately, you know, I came into this game at a young age with big ideas. And despite how good of a person he is, there's no mercy in combat. And I have to do what I have to do. All right, it's either me or him. So, you know, what happened. But he should be respected. And I don't think he should ever be questioned whether he was a true champion or not in my absence. He fought two of the toughest guys in the division. He won those fights, and he carries himself like a champion. So I think that should be recognized.
Last thing for me, John, the call out of Brock Lesnar I think was a little bit unexpected. Talk about the genesis of that, where that was coming from, and why you were motivated to do that.
You know, to be honest with you, I have no clue where this Brock Lesnar situation came from, how it started. But it got serious really quick. And I started talking to my management team, first round management, and my team at Jackson's MMA. And I said, well, what do you guys think if this was to happen? And obviously my manager's like, well, it's going to be a big payday, right? That's his job, right? Make me money. But my teammate Jackson's MMA, Jackson Wink, they said, John, you can win that fight. You know, you're going to have to dig deep. You're going to have to take your self-belief to a higher level. You're going to have to earn this fight. Obviously, you're going to have to change a lot, you know, fighting at 225 or 230. But so you can do this. And so we made up in our mind that we were serious about it. And I think it'd be great for the MMA world, right? It would definitely bring more general public to the sport of mixed martial arts. And that's what we need. We need to expand our sport. And so why not be the guy to play a part in that?
So John Jones, your UFC light heavyweight champion, fantastic performance, no question about it. Oh, man, when that dude is on, he is on. I hope he can keep himself out of trouble and just do what he should have. How crazy would it be if he's able to put together another title defense streak like he had before? Got himself all the way up to 9, had to start all over again. If he could somehow beat that record that, you know, DJ is looking to beat soon, that would just be insane. All right, let's talk about the co-main event real quick. Tyron Woodley picked up a victory over Demian Maia. I'm torn on this one, Cole Coffey, because I tell you what, I thought Tyron Woodley fought an incredibly effective fight. I thought he did exactly what you have to do against Demian Maia, and that is show incredible takedown defense. I think the live stats that we looked at one point were 24 takedowns by Demian Maia. Just incredible takedown defense. Had him hurt early on, an uppercut, yeah. You know, super early in the fight, just
that was
completely
crazy.
Busted up Maya's eye.
It was like so quick. I almost didn't even see it.
Right.
It just happened so quick. It was like, what? I thought maybe this is me being the conspiracy person, because it happened so quick that when he tried to get that takedown and he was holding him, I thought, man, the only way his eye could be that fucked up is if, like, Tyron, like, as he was defending, was like gouging his eye or something. Because I was like, I didn't see the punch. And I was like, you know, maybe he's just like doing it. But I was like, Maia didn't complain. But I wonder if some of those things when you go in, the adrenaline, everything's rushing, that as it's happening and he's trying to do whatever, he's not really realizing that he's being hurt or whatever.
Could have.
But it wasn't that case. But that's what I was thinking. Because I was just like, did he even hit him? And I was like, how is his eye so gouged?
Crazy. I thought the fight was going to be over right then.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, there's no way Damon can see out of that. So
the beast.
I'm torn because it was an incredibly effective fight by Tyron Woodley. And, you know, Tyron just executed a game plan to a T, but it wasn't exciting. I get why the crowd was booing. I mean, at one point they did the wave. At another point, everybody got their
cell phones out. I was wondering if they were doing the wave, because the way that it was getting loud, I was like, are they doing the wave?
Oh, because you could hear it in the back. Because yeah. You guys were literally just off the floor. It's kind of a weird setup you guys had
tonight.
It
was a weird setup. Kind of sucked, but it was weird.
It was a weird day all around. They let us in like 30 minutes late. It was it's been a crazy week. To only just be down here in Anaheim, man, I feel like I'm more exhausted than I am when we fly halfway around the world. So I don't know. I mean, so Tyron Woodley picks up a defense of his belt, defeats a guy in Demian Maia who is like just smoked some other people, some top contenders, and then Dana White comes in and trashes him in the post-fight press conference and takes away the fight with GSP, and I get
Did
it, man.
Did he take it away, or finally have,
or finally admit that it was already gone,
or finally have an excuse, or finally have something he could push the blame off on?
Well, there's a good question: the chicken and the egg scenario, right? Which one actually came first? So I don't know. So where do you stand on the whole situation? Because I feel like Tyron Woodley did what he was supposed to do, but I also sent, like, if I was a fan sitting in the crowd tonight, now, first of all, it was a great card top to bottom, so I couldn't have been that pissed. But if I'm sitting there, and it's the co-main event of the night, and I paid, you know, a pretty penny to get in, you know, and I've had a few frosty beverages at that point, I probably am a little bit upset, especially, you know, in the fourth and fifth rounds when I think, you know, Tyron could have pressed the gas a little bit. But then Tyron comes to the post-fight press conference like, well, you know, I threw a right hand and my shoulder slipped out of socket, and then I knew I couldn't throw my big right hand anymore, and so that changed everything. And I don't know, man. Like, I get the criticism, but I almost feel like it's too much. And the fact that, as you said, did this really lose in the George St. Pierre fight, or was it already done and nobody just wanted to talk about it? So I don't know. Sort me out, man. Mm-hmm. Sort me out.
No, I think you're right. You know, When I think about what he did in his fight, I mean, again, yes, we know that exciting fights is what sells, and we all want them to do that, but also this is these guys' lives, you know, this is his belt, you know, and for him to go out and just try to do, you know, always try to go balls out crazy is either just going to get himself caught into a submission or maybe get that knockout that I was saying was going to happen. Which
dude,
didn't
I'll tell you
happen.
What, it's so funny. So anybody that doesn't know, on the weigh-in stream, Cole Coffey didn't know that the audio was hot. He's like, bro, I think Damian Maia is going to win by knockout. And I was like, that's pretty ridiculous. But I tell you what was so funny is because he's hurt. Maia's hurt bad. I'm like, this fight's over.
Yeah.
And then Woodley can't put him away. And then all of a sudden in the fourth and fifth round, Maia started landing a couple left hands.
I know.
Dude, he tagged him a little bit. And I was like, oh, my God, if this happens, I'm like, this is so ridiculous.
I thought about that. I was like, dude, I'm going to be so right. But, you know, you think about it. What Woodley was able to do, he put a perfect game plan. I mean, he drilled over and over and over on stuffing the takedowns, stuffing everything that he knew that Damian has been able to do with everybody else with complete ease. And I'm not discounting the fact that, you know, there were a couple fence grabs that, you know, that did legit stop of the takedowns. But at that point, it was pretty early on, and this is Tyron who has incredible wrestling. So there's no guarantee that even if, you know, Damian got him down, that he was going to be able to hold him down.
Right.
But, I mean, a lot of people we've seen, when Damian gets him down, I mean, he's like a boa constrictor, and he has all your limbs to the point where you can't do anything. But there was a legit, you know, he did stop the takedown, so who knows. But you figure he did everything that he needed to do. He stopped, what is it, what they say, like 22, 25?
Yeah, the live stats had 24. I don't know, they might have gone back and revised this since then, but the live stats had 24.
I mean, that's incredible. So, I mean, just having that and being able to do that, that shut down, or it would have been kind of maybe even more grueling or boring when, you know, you see some of those fights that Damian just sort of slowly just creeps around him and locks him down to where they can't get away, and then eventually finishes it. And at times, if you think about what he's doing, the skill-wise, it's completely amazing, but it doesn't look that great when you're watching it happen. But he was hitting, he was having sharp boxing, his punches were crisp, he was hurting Damian, so he, in all sense, put on a perfect plan, execution of whatever
Absolutely.
His plan was. But was it the most exciting plan? No, but again, it's not like they're like gladiators, you know, they're there to perform, but you know, these are these guys' lives. I don't expect them to go with reckless abandon every time just for the fact.
Only are you protecting your brain cells, but the difference between a win and loss is huge in terms of financial impact.
And especially if you have the title and you lose the title, you're going, things change up really, really big for you. So, I mean, I don't hate on it. I can see where the fans were very, very upset about it, because I think there was a lot of excitement behind what could have happened. I think people really wanted to see Tyron come out there and just throw with reckless man. They wanted to see the punches. They wanted to see it. And you saw more of a counterpuncher than anybody that was doing it. I mean, for it to be that Damian Maia was the aggressor is just weird, you know, for him to be. I mean, if a match was won just by what I would consider octagon control and pushing forward,
he was the one doing it.
He would have had
25 minutes worth of it.
He would have had a unanimous decision in his favor. So I think it was just a letdown, because, you know, when you look at Woodley, just his physique, just everything that you know he's capable. So to see him sort of play this, you know, Floyd Mayweather role where he's just sitting back and just counterpunching and just being on this defensive side, I mean, I think you just feel like you only saw half of them. But the half that you saw was perfectly executed to that game plan to make everything that Damian did just not happen.
So it's funny that you say the Floyd Mayweather role, because I wonder if he should embrace the Floyd Mayweather role entirely, which, not exactly the financial side of it, because he's not making that, but the side of, like, F you know what I mean? Because, like, I think Tyron pretty much has gotten over the fact that people aren't going to like him, and I don't necessarily understand why people don't like him. But I think he's kind of gotten to the point now where he's just like, whatever, I don't care if you like me or not, I'm going to go out and beat everybody, and then in the end you'll have to respect me. But I wonder if he should just tone it up a little bit to – and again, God, at the end of the day, this sport is about fighting, right? But, I mean, I think we all agree it's sporting entertainment. It has to be a little bit of entertainment value as well. I'm not saying the dude should play a character, but I wonder if, like, that's really the way he feels. You know, we always say it's you just got to take yourself and turn it up a little bit. I wonder if he should almost be the guy that's like, F you, please hate me. I don't know.
I mean, he's kind of done that in not so many words, especially when you watch, like, his – well, I'm just saying, like, you watch his post-fight – pre-fight interviews, and a lot of the time when he gets in a mood and he's like, he doesn't want to answer his question, he doesn't want to boo, that's kind of quietly, you know, giving the middle finger to you, like, you know, this is how it's going to be, this is whatever,
right.
Take it or leave it, you know, but without saying take it or leave it, you know. But I don't know, I mean, I can't fault him for what he did. I mean, again, he executed the game plan from what he was describing perfectly, and he shut down a tough Damian Maia who has been just running through people doing what he did. And, you know, and the commentators kind of went on to say, like, what Damian does is great for those guys that maybe aren't the top two or three or four, you know.
Right. But it's just never going to get you over.
But when you get to the top guys, you got to be able, because it's, you know, just like for some of the women when they had a really hard time getting past Ronda's arm bar. You know, but then due to what Ronda was doing, everyone went out there and drilled it nonstop. And then you saw that that wasn't the case anymore.
Mm-hmm.
People learned how to stop that initial takedowns and things that Ronda was using to force her into where she was able to get the arm bars. So, you know, I wouldn't say that the game is past Damian because he's at such a high level of jiu-jitsu that you're not going to negate the fact that if you fuck up and let him take your back, if you let him get you down the ground, you're in a world of hurt. Like, it's not like that's just going to change. But I think, you know, if you realize, just like kind of what they do with Rana, don't let him get you to the ground. Keep him separate. And if you have great striking that you can keep the distance, you're probably going to win.
I love the fact that Damian, first of all, showed up to the post-fight press conference.
Yeah.
Second of all, you know.
He's a stud.
He is. And I love the fact that, because I asked him, I said, you know, is it possible that this is it? I mean, you worked so hard to get back here. And you know, maybe it's just not worth it for you to start over. And he's like, got bad news for everybody else. I still have energy to do this. You know what I mean? It's like, good for you, man.
Yeah. I mean, when he's doing what he's doing, man, he's kind of easily getting through these guys. And, I mean, I don't know what his pay is on these things. So, I bet you could look that
up. I'll look it up right now.
But
our man, Steven Morocco, was able to get the salaries a little bit early.
I mean, I would think that if he's got a decent amount and he's happy what he's doing.
$110,000 in a loss?
That's not bad.
It's not bad.
Wow, that's good. He's getting $110,000.
Yeah, not bad.
Holy cow. Good for him. But yeah, I mean, this is a guy that's been running through guys and he's made it to that title level. Why not do it?
I agree.
Why not keep doing it? Because he makes it look pretty easy when he's got a guy like Tyron Woodley.
He got busted up tonight. But it's kind of funny when you think about it. As visually bad as that eye was,
yeah.
I mean, Dana straight ripped on Tyron, right? It was like the least strikes ever, right? So this continues that whole thing of like, how many fights does he have and not really take damage? I mean, yes, this was visually bad,
yeah.
But it wasn't like his brain was just getting beaten over and over, you know. So anyway, yeah, I'm glad to see that Damian's going to fight on. I don't know if he'll ever be a UFC champion, but as you said, you get outside of those top three or four, and he's one hell of a challenge. So,
yep.
Meanwhile, Tyron Woodley, it looks like maybe he'll fight Robbie Lawler next. I think that probably makes some sense when it looks in terms of rankings. I'm kind of bummed for him that he's not fighting George St. Pierre. I'm still just not down for this GSP Michael Bisping thing. I guess it makes more sense since Whitaker's got a knee injury and all that, but. And I like it from Michael Bisping's point of view because he's been around so long. He deserves money fights, man. He really does. The guy has busted his ass, but it's just hard for me to get excited about it, man. I wanted to see GSP come in. I mean, dude, GSP, Tyron Woodley, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm an idiot, but I think I'd rather see GSP Woodley than I would GSP Michael Bisping. And Tyron's saying all the right things. You know, I'm a better version of GSP. He's scared of me, all these things. I don't know, man. I think I'd rather see that fight.
It's kind of interesting because we don't know what we're going to see from GSP when he comes back. We don't know what his level is. I mean, we like to think that, yeah, I mean, I know he's still been training. He's doing all these things. But, I mean, is he at UFC Octagon fitness ready? I mean, for what is going to be out there? But when you see the output that came from Tyron tonight, it'd almost be a perfect fight for him because Tyron wasn't really throwing much. They might be two guys. It might be the first 3 minutes of guys just sort of feeling out and respecting the guys way too much and not really even throwing. So it could be even, what if that was even boring and even less strikes thrown? Two guys that are waiting to counterpunch on each other.
I get, in some ways, I guess that's a little bit of what, like, Dana was saying by alluding to the fact that, well, I'll put it in Michael Bisping because Michael Bisping will come to fight.
Yeah.
Because there is a chance. I mean, GSP, for as big of a star as he was and is, ain't always the most exciting fighter either.
No, he wasn't. I mean, it wasn't like he was, like, tearing up the stat sheets when it came to number
other than
of
takedowns.
Strikes.
Yeah, other than takedowns.
So, I don't know. What, he's right. I mean, like, what's perfect is that Bisping will go for the knockout and probably eventually walk himself into some sort of mistake that gets him finished or whatever. But, I mean, I don't really – the way that Bisping was before injury and all this other stuff, I wouldn't think that GSP would finish him or anything. But now I'm just like, I don't know.
Dude, if Bisping – can you imagine if Bisping wins that fight? He'll own wins over GSP and Anderson Silva, who most people before John Jones considered the top two of all time.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, that'd be his I would think that he would walk away.
I would think so too, right? You beat him and then you just go, hey, Robert Whittaker, thank you for your time, sir. Yeah. Here's my belt. Have a nice day.
Unless he wanted one last one. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've been saying for a while, I think that he's been waiting to pick his last couple shots and right out of the sunset, you know, and he's hoping to get that win, and GSP would be the perfect one. If he could get that win, I would say definitely go out because you have nothing good waiting after that point. You just tell his body is not there where it used to be. And I mean, I don't think he wants, unless he wanted to fight Rockhold again, just to kind of, because they've been chirping at each other.
Oh.
You know, maybe one more of that, because I mean, where the hell has Rockhold been as well?
Right. Like, try to take advantage of him coming off a layoff, coming off all that.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the history, because, yeah, I mean, after GSP, it's not like there's any heat or whatever there. But, I mean, after that, there's nobody else that I really want to see him fight. I'd almost just rather that he go out on top of things how he wants to be, go out instead of, you know, get beat badly a couple times and then just kind of lose that momentum and lose that. You can't lose your legacy of what he's built up.
I agree. It'd be a big money fight for him. Then you walk away and you keep your desk job, your analyst job, and you're good.
Yeah.
Why put yourself through that? Yeah. All right. Well, listen, that's what perhaps lies in the future. What lies in the future for Tyron Woodley? We don't know exactly, but he had a little chip on his shoulder, I guess, and he's pretty happy with himself. And again, I'm a little bit perplexed because I don't know. I see where he's coming from. I agree with everything he's saying, but again, if it was my money on the line that I paid for a ticket, I might have booed too. I wouldn't have booed. I'd never boo anybody. But
yeah,
but I might not have been as entertained as I want to.
There you go.
All right, let's hear from Tyron Woodley.
Congratulations, Tyron, on your win.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, brother.
We know what the crowd thought of the fight. Give me your opinion. What did you think of your performance tonight?
Shit, I thought it was a great performance. You got a guy on a 7-fight win streak. He's taking out all 7 opponents, world-class guys, got on their back, submitted them. Very resilient, very persistent on his attack. I was able to go out there and stop every – how many takedowns did he try?
I think we saw 24 at one point. 24 tried, 24 denied.
So I think we need to look at the different stats. This is my fourth title fight in 12 months. He shot 24 times, and thinking of how many different top-class welterweights he would have been able to put on the ground. He was not able to do any of that on me. I felt good. I felt my conditioning was great. We accepted this fight 4 weeks ago, and, man, I felt amazing. Sometimes I think those shorter camps are better. So me and my coaches were happy. I know our fans, they want to see blood. They want to see cuts. They want to see a back-and-forth exchange. You also have to recognize that I'm fighting specialists. You know, Stephen Thompson, I'm not going to sit out there and try to out-spin kick him. I'm not going to try to take down Damian Maya and prove that, hey, it's time for me to get a black belt. The brown belt's going to take you down and go for the submission. So I felt like it was a very tactical fight. I felt like I did everything, stuck to the game plan, and I walk around with my head up, man, and the belt still around my waist.
You had him hurt incredibly early in the fight. You busted up his eye pretty good. Did you feel like maybe you were going to finish him in that first round?
Yeah, I felt like I was going to finish him. I threw an overhand right in the second round. First first or second round, my shoulder slipped out. And I was like, oh, shit. So I can't hit him with this overhand right, which is my moneymaker. So I had to throw straight punches. a couple other times after that, I saw it opening, and I had to throw it just because out of reaction. I threw it again and kind of slipped out. So two or three times, I felt like my shoulder kind of slipped out. So I had to really be disciplined to use a lot of feints. And if you guys saw me, a couple of times you saw me come forward. It looked like I was going to throw the right hand, and I had to really, really guess on – like second guess whether I should throw it or not, or just proceed with pushing forward. So that's what champions do, man. We go out there and I fought a fight, broke my foot the first kick of the fight with Kelvin Gastelum, and I had to go out there and I had to finish the fight. So I'm very, very happy in my condition, very happy in my coaching and game plan, and just the mental toughness.
And last thing for me, Tyron, I know you didn't want to talk about George St. Pierre before the fight, but you're willing to mention him afterwards. It sounds like he's really campaigning for a fight with Michael Bisping, doesn't want anything else. Yeah. I mean, how does that impact you? I know you want to prove that you're the greatest welterweight of all time, and that would seem to be an opportunity to do it. So what's your opinion when he's, trying to get this Michael Bisping fight instead?
I said that earlier when we had the press conference, because I listened to Bisping podcast, and he had his best friend George on there, and they were talking about fighting each other in a very kumbaya fashion. So with that said, I had already kind of put that out the back of my mind. If I think too much down the road, as I did when I fought Rory McDonald, I was thinking about, hey, if you beat Rory, you fighting for the world title, and I went out there and I got my butt whooped. So I like to focus and give my opponent the respect he deserves. He's in that position for a reason. I gave him the respect, and now he should have to fight me. If you were the best welterweight of all time, you're going to come back into the sport and go up a weight class. I guarantee you if Damian Maia would have won, he would have been talking about fighting Damian Maia. I guarantee you if Stephen Thompson would have won, he would have been looking to fight Stephen Thompson. He doesn't want to fight me because I'm a better version of him.
All right, Tyron Woodley might not never be a fan favorite, but I like the guy, man. He's certainly impressive. I just get it. Sometimes he's not exciting. All right, somebody that is exciting, Cyborg. Chris Justino is now a UFC champion. Man, it sounds crazy to say that. It's been such a long road for her to get here. Tonya Evinger was pretty upset with herself after the fight, but I think she did what she could do. Taking the fight on short notice, moving up a weight class, getting hit early on and looking like she didn't want to be in there, and then kind of gathering her wits and saying, hell no, I'm not going out like a bitch. Yeah. I'm going to get this done. And never really having Cyborg in any danger, but at least making her work for it. And, I think a lot of people expected this to be over early. I thought it could be over early, but I had a lot of respect for Evinger. But you're talking about Cyborg. She can knock out anybody.
Yeah.
But I think I have two positives. And one is I praise Evinger's toughness because I think she was hurt early on and could have gone away. Mm-hmm. But I kind of almost praise Cyborg as well for being patient, as weird as that sounds. Yep. She was pacing herself for a potential five-round fight, and I think that's smart because somebody that's as big as she is and cuts as much weight as she does and all those, like, could get tired very quickly and screw herself up. And I kind of thought it was a smart fight.
Yeah, I thought she looked so well-coached and looked so just ready for it. I mean, she was focused. You're right. She wasn't just charging because normally she just runs in there, hits a few times, realize that the girl doesn't want to be in there, and she just finishes them. I think she realized, and that maybe it was the respect for Tonya as well, that she didn't push it as much as she could or maybe wanted to kind of feel it out and display more of her skills. But, I mean, she was really reserved with her shots. I thought it was her striking was crisp. I thought that she probably her striking looked better than we've seen, even though she wasn't knocking out people. I mean, you could tell. I mean, I think one of the first couple of shots that she hit on Tonya made this face just like,
ooh,
kind of like that face you make when you smell something really stinky, because she was just like, that was like absolutely terrible. What was that god awful thing that just happened to my head? But I mean, kudos to her. I mean, she's tough as nails, and she hung in there and she pushed Cyborg further than we've seen anybody do in quite some time. Yep. And I think it was a testament to the fact that, I mean, she is a champion. She's a champion at a lighter weight class, yep. Went up in weight, took it on short notice. I mean, she'll be going back down to her better weight class.
She'll have time to prepare.
Yeah, and I think it's a great addition. I know there's been some, I guess maybe some rough seas for some reason. They weren't bringing her into the UFC. Wasn't maybe hip to her style, but I'm glad that she at least has another one or two. I'm not sure how many left, but with that determination and doing what nobody wants to do, nobody wants to take a fight with Cyborg, let alone a sort of a short notice fight.
Yeah,
and going up in weight, and good for her. Tanya's a tough cookie, man, and I think she's a welcome addition to the UFC roster.
Yep, I think she'll do good stuff at 35. Cyborg's contract runs out in October. A lot was made of that. I think they'll re-sign her. I think now,
of course,
she maybe she'll try to, you know, bolt to Japan or something like that. But
she's gonna want some money.
She's gonna want money. But you know what? I think the UFC is gonna be willing to pay for it. We have seen it in her UFC run. We knew it before, but we've definitely seen it in her UFC run. We've been there for all of her fights, and she is a star, man. And she gets the star treatment. You talk about the open workouts this week.
Yep.
I mean, every time she does an appearance, she moves the needle, and I think they see that.
Yeah, she gets a big pop, and I don't know what. I mean, we know that UFC was paying her pay at Invicta, so I'm not sure what her contract was there, but I imagine it's not at the same level of what, you know. I think she's going to really step it up. Even outside of the fact of being a champ, I think coming into the proper UFC as opposed to, you know, what she's doing in Invicta, I think she would really want to have that start ramping up. And now that she is a champion, I mean, I think she could command some price. I mean,
disclosed pay tonight was $200,000. Solid. Tyron
Woodley with win and bonus.
No win bonus. Just a 200 flat.
Interesting.
Tyron Woodley made 500 flat. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. Maybe this is stepping out of line here.
Yeah.
But I think Cyborg moves the needle more than Tyron Woodley.
Oh, for sure.
I think she could make 500 flat.
I mean, if just gauging on what happened at the open workout, she got a much bigger pop from the crowd than Tyron did. I mean, people were hip to the fact that, I mean, you know, he's a champ and he's very, very respected. But, I mean, like, Cyborg, just people realize that they're seeing something that's unlike pretty much what you've ever seen before. She's a whole different beast.
I agree. I think in her pre-fight package, she's like, I'm the real Mike Tyson, or I'm the Mike Tyson of MMA or whatever. The thing is, like, I think there's some truth to that, because here's what I think about Cyborg is, you know, everybody says, well, there's no depth at 145, and there's not. It's still developing. But the thing is, I don't think people care. Just like Mike Tyson back in the day, you know, you would be like, hey, who's Tyson fighting? Are you going to watch the Tyson fight? Who's he fighting? I don't fucking know. I'm just going to go watch Tyson beat up somebody.
Yep.
I think, and no disrespect, I'm not saying that, like, it didn't matter that Tanya was in there. I'm just saying people will tune in to see Cyborg no matter who's on the other side of the cage.
That's true. And what she's done lately, especially even with the open workouts and other stuff, and if you guys haven't seen her at some of these things, you know, watch some of the videos, just come, like, it's she's ratcheting up the whole entertainment factor. She's being so engaging with the crowd. I mean, I love the fact that they made them
Cyborg
turn down
agent.
The music.
Oh, yeah.
They turned down the radio, and they had the guy in there playing the, I'm going to say it wrong, berimbe or whatever, but this old Portuguese instrument that's all associated with capoeira and stuff. So they're playing it, and I was like, well, it was kind of a catchy little beat, just very rhythmic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were going and doing all the capoeira stuff, and then she goes and does her dancing there at the end, just showing a lot of personality. Then, I mean, like, the crowd was just eating it up, and she's been doing that more and more and more, and she's playing the game right, and she's becoming so engaging. And we've always liked her. I mean, I've been kind of rooting for her even through all of her little downfalls, because, you know, she's just one of these characters that you're not going to see many like her that are going to be able to be, one, so dominant, but she's just a force of nature in what she's doing. And when you sit down and talk to her, her English has gotten great, but she's a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's done some kind of shitty things in the past, you know, with, you know, popping for tests or whatever. And, you know, not that you want to, you know, hit somebody out on the streets, but if it was a bully, makes it a little bit better.
I haven't seen too many people complain.
Yeah, I mean, like, nobody's been complaining, but still, you know, it's something, man. She is quite a character, and I mean, I think it's one that if there's going to be, just like with Ronda, there's that it factor that was able to push Ronda up. I mean, are you going to what's neat about her, because she's doing it for all the right reasons. She's such a dominant athlete. She's engaging, and she's at the top of her game, and she seems to be getting better, whereas, you know, some other athletes maybe get by on maybe looks, maybe not so much on talent. Like, she is legit the real deal. I mean, when you it's hard to not pay attention to the fact of what she's able to do in there. And I think people love winners. People love people that just go in there and literally just destroy people. And that was the thing about Connor. Connor, I think part of his biggest thing that people loved about him was that he talked so much shit, but then he backed it up. And then people were just like, I don't even know who this Irish guy is, but I hear him talk shit. And then he goes in and he fucking does it. And everybody's like, I absolutely love the dude. And it's like, okay, you know, people love winners. People love that go in there, back people. They love to back people that go in there, talk shit, but then do it. You know, people love winners. And I mean,
a cyborg doesn't even talk shit. She's respectful, but she's a destroyer.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. I'm just predicting now. I think the UFC resigns her. Now, I thought they'd resign Gegard Mousasi as well. I was wrong about that one. I've been right about everyone along the way, except for that one. I was wrong there. I think they're going to re-sign her. I think they're going
to
make it work.
Somebody would have to pay a pretty penny for her to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
So they're kind of in a good bargaining spot where nobody really else has the bankroll to, besides maybe a Bellator or something like that, to pay her for what it is. But
then
you
need to do pay-per-view to recoup the investment that you have.
Right.
And all indications are that the Bellator's last pay-per-view didn't do very well.
Yeah.
So
it's tough. She's in a tougher position like that where, yeah, maybe there's not a lot of people that can pay the money she wants.
I think they know
but
that.
She will pay more. She will get – I would think that she would be able to get more. I would think that they would, you know, say, all right, hey, this is kind of what we've been doing. I think they realize that she's popping, and I mean, maybe the next step is to, you know, do another headline event somewhere, maybe down in Brazil, just to see how much she's moving the needle in somewhat, and take it from there.
I dig it. All right, Robbie Lawler picked up a decision win over Donald Cerrone. Good fight, fun fight. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe not fight of the decade like some people thought it would. Another two rounds sure would have made it perhaps a little bit more interesting. I don't know. I thought it was a fun fight. Two good fighters, two entertaining fighters. Neither one of them had anything to hold their head about. I actually scored the fight for Cowboy, giving him the third round just slightly. But even in my play-by-play, I was like, listen, man, this thing's so close. Like, it was basically, do you prefer the combination work and the volume of Donald Cerrone, or do you prefer the power of Robbie Lawler when he landed? I think that's what it boiled down to in the third round. I think the first two rounds are pretty clear. So no harm, no foul. And,
Yeah. You
know, I had picked Cowboy in my staff picks as well. And I was, you know, I've been on quite the roll lately, crawling my ass out the basement. So I was probably kind of colored by the fact that I wanted to pick up another win and try to move my way up the list and get my ass out of the bottom half.
Well, it's funny because when Robbie, if you'd seen any of the other interviews and things that we did, or anybody pretty much did throughout the week, Robbie was just kind of just like over it. He just seemed over everything, you know, and it's funny, until he got into the octagon, and right when they were like saying his name, I was like, wow, did he just smile? I was like, I think that's the first smile he did
all week,
you know,
all
like,
week.
I think that was just Robbie. That's just vintage Robbie. That's the Robbie you want to see, who's just over all that bullshit that you got to do. But once it's time to get in there and throw down, he's in his happy place. And I thought he was just, you know, very, very impressive in just how he was able to handle some of the stuff that Donald did. And then coming out with that initial flurry that he did was,
you're like, he's going to put this away quick.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of people say that Donald, you know, has that slow start, you know. But also, Donald usually needs to get hit a couple times before
right?
he snaps out. So it's a tough thing when you want to finish him, you know, early because he starts slow. But by trying to go after him, you're kind of giving him that extra boost to get his shit in gear, you know.
It made it fun. It was perfect.
Yeah,
and then
it was fun.
Cowboy survived the onslaught. And then, you know, he came out in the second round. He's like, all right, now I'm ready. You know, now I'm ready.
Yeah.
And it was fun, man. It was a good fight. Cowboy walked by press row afterwards, even though he lost, man, he had a smile on his face. He's like, that was fun, man. You know what I mean? You gotta love fighters like that that just say, damn it, I went there and threw down, and that's all that mattered.
Yeah, according to Fight Metrics, I mean, he actually edged out Robbie in all categories. Yeah, control, a minute 29, it shows, 32 for Robbie, 99 strikes, total strikes for Donald, 85 for Robbie, 82 significant strikes. Even significant strikes, they need to change the fucking wording on that. Because when I think significance, I think of the ones that are doing damage.
Like rock you or something like that.
Yeah, just like rocking them. And I'm like, what the fuck do they consider a significant strike? You know, there's 99 total strikes, and they consider 82 of them significant. I mean, like, what were the other ones? Just like, oh, I'm just tapping you.
That's
I'm just gauging the distance.
That's
just gauging the distance. You know?
That's not significant.
It's just a plain pity patter. But, and he had one takedown where Robbie didn't have any. So, I mean, it's interesting. So if you just look at Fight Metrics, I mean, granted, that never really tells the full thing because the numbers can be padded and other ones. But Donald had the edge in all the different ones. And I think if you go down the breakdown in the Fight Metrics, just looking at the numbers, Robbie had a better first round. Donald had a stronger, much better second round. And then the third round, actually, Donald had the edge in strikes and significant strikes.
See? That's what I had.
Yep. It was close, though. Close. You're talking 34 strikes of Lawler to 40 of Cerrone. 31 strikes, significant strikes to 38 of Donald's. But, I mean, that might as well be a draw at that point.
It was close. All right. Volkan Uzdemir picked up a win over Jimmy Manuel, knocking him out quick. So funny. Volkan did an interview with him last week, and he was like, I'm going to knock Jimmy out in the first round. He just got a new contract. He speaking of the money, he made $110,000. $80,000 to show, $30,000 to win. And said he was going to knock out Jimmy Manuel in the first round. He did it. Pretty impressive stuff, man. He kind of roughed him up inside a little bit and then finished him off. And here's a dude that at the beginning of the year, again, nobody knew who the hell he was. And now all of a sudden he's knocking on the door of title contention. It's ridiculous.
Do you know where Spock from Star Trek is from?
Vulcan. Is it Vulcan?
Yeah.
Is it just Vulcan?
It's V-U-L-C-A-N. Yeah, it's Vulcan. It's every time I hear this dude's name, I keep thinking of Spock. He put that Spock mind trick and just fucked up.
Next opponent should just take his box of chocolates, right? Like at the weigh-ins, Jimmy wouldn't take his chocolates. Nobody ever takes his box of chocolates.
That's right. Well,
somebody should take his chocolates.
Goes to show, you don't take the chocolates, he's going to whip your ass.
Impressive, man. Vulcan's a nice guy, and again, came out of nowhere, and he's like, dude, I'm going to knock him out in the first round. Did it, he's somebody to keep your eye on for sure, man, that light heavyweight division. Ricardo Lamas looked fantastic in downing our boy Jason Knight. I mean, we got love for Ricardo Lamas, too, especially the crew down at MMA Masters, man. That's a fantastic group of individuals. But Jason Knight has kind of grown on us.
Yeah.
And, man, dude, it was funny because, you know, that it was a huge step up in competition. He wanted it. He wanted the challenge. Kudos to him for doing it. Came up short, got rocked, still showed how just durable he is, tried to survive, and then, you know, afterwards was basically like complaining about the stoppage. It was like, it was a good stoppage.
Yeah, it was legit.
Good. But to me, Ricardo Lamas just again proved why he is a top featherweight, remains a top featherweight. But Jason Knight, to me, didn't necessarily take a step back in my book. You know, he certainly, again, tried to take this top challenge and definitely came up short. I mean, it was definitely Lamas' night, but Knight just showed the fact that he's fun, man. He's a fun fighter. I think he's as long as he can keep putting on fights like that, I think he's going to keep getting booked.
Yep.
Aljamain Sterling picked up a win over Hinton Burrell. To me, I thought
this was
the best. I think that's the best fight we've seen out of Aljamain Sterling.
That was super impressive.
I thought he put it all together, man. I really did. I think he put it all together. And Hinton's a tough cat, but I really thought this is the best performance we've seen out of Aljamain. I think this was the one that kind of showed that all the promise and all the hype that's been around him that a lot of us have had on him. This was the night he put it all together in the UFC.
Yeah, he looked so good. I mean, he was just dominating. And I hate to think that it was more of that we're just seeing a degraded or downgraded Hennen, because I still think Hennen beats a lot of the guys in the division.
It wasn't like Hennen fought poorly.
No, he didn't. But Aljamain just looked like he was just stronger. And you know, there were areas where, you know, he wasn't afraid to go to the ground. He wasn't afraid to get in Hennin's guard, and when he did, he was delivering like some serious strikes. I just thought that Aljamain really was enjoying himself. And after the fight, you know, I mean, you couldn't tell he was even in a fight. I mean, he looked spotless. So he did a great job of evading a lot of Hennin stuff and delivering some good blows, but good job for him. And then he talked at the very end. He said he had some house to sell.
That's right. He's doing real estate now, just like his boy Al Iaquinta, right?
Yeah, he was like, oh, hit him up. I forget where he said he had a place for sale or something, but yeah, he's like, Raging Al's real estate or whatever.
Oh, is he working with Raging Al?
I don't know. I think he was just like, call him up or whatever. Or maybe he didn't say Al's, but he was like,
and this is fantastic reporting from backstage.
Yeah, well, you know, that's how we do.
Who's your favorite post fight interview tonight? Nobody stood out?
No.
Was that bad, huh?
Well, I mean,
you're on the grind, I know.
Yeah.
It's not fun back there.
It isn't. But not, I don't know. There was no real favorite.
All right, skip that question. Brian Ortega picked up a win over Ricardo Moicano. Ortega, man. What can you say? Dude, he was in a tough fight here, man.
Yeah.
Moicano looked good. He really did. And it was back and forth. Ortega was showing a great chin. And dude, it went to the ground for 1 second, and he got the guillotine choke finish. I mean, that was just nuts.
That was about the only part I really saw.
To literally just be able to finish it that quick.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I remember remarking like, "Oh man, now he fucked up. He let him take him down to the ground." I was like, "Ugh." I was saying because I was surprised he didn't try to pop back up.
Right.
I was like, I know he could pop back up. I was like, he fucked up. He should have popped back up there. And then I was like, never mind.
Fight's over.
Never mind. That's why he didn't try to pop up.
That guy is incredibly exciting. He is literally the living embodiment of Southern California, man. Just Southern California, long-haired surfer stoner, man. And he is fucking awesome, dude. That guy. Keep your eye on Brian Ortega, man. He is fantastic. Calvin Kattar picked up a clear-cut decision win over Andre Feely. Good on Kattar, looking good in his debut. Feely just looked off. I don't know what it was. Feely just never looked settled, man. He was moving a lot, but just never sitting down on his shots. I don't know, man. I like, obviously, Andre Feely a lot. The Team Alpha Male crew has always been good to us, but just had an off night. There's no question about it. The women, Alexandra Albu, picked up a decision win over Kylan Curran, an early fight of the night contender. Tough for them that they didn't get it done. To me, I thought the scoring was right. I thought Albu picked up the first two rounds. I thought Curran picked up the third. It was funny because I looked over at Kevin Ioli. Like I said earlier, we both, you know, were sitting next to each other. We both had it scored the same way. And we both pretty much predicted what would happen, that the crowd's going to go nuts and be pissed, because it seems like that happens a lot. When one fighter picks up the first two rounds and another fighter clearly wins the third but loses the decision, the crowd boos, you know what I mean? Because they're like, dude, hold on. You know, I saw this fighter finish strong, and they deserve the win. And Curran was fighting back tears as she walked past press row. She has just struggled to get results in the UFC. Yeah. But she's so tough, man. She never quits. And, I mean, Albu's a beast, man. She is so powerful and so strong, and Curran fought so hard. But I got to say, man, even though the crowd booed, I thought this was the right decision.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just happy because it was two very attractive girls throwing down hard.
Cold coffee with the hard-hitting journalism there.
Yeah.
No, it was a good fight, man. They were scrapping.
Well, to be honest, I missed, like, a good portion of it. I would just kind of tune in when I was like, oh, yeah, I need to be reminded that there were two attractive girls throwing some serious bombs. Ain't nothing like a bloody hot chick to get you all excited.
Wow. That's what you say at 4 o'clock in the morning. There's no question about it. All right, Jared Brooks, I thought looked really good in the win over Eric Schiller.
He looked really hot, too.
Drew Dober also scored a win over Josh Bergman, a big knockout to start it. Any weird uncomfortable?
Okay, he looked good, too.
Big knockout of Josh Bergman to start the night. Impressive. So top to bottom, entertaining card. It's been a crazy week, man. I'll tell you what, it was you know, I was thinking about it too, Cole Coffey.
Don't think too long. We got to head out in the airport in like an hour.
I think the Tuesday night fights also make our fight weeks feel – the Dana White's Tuesday night contender series make our fight weeks feel a little bit longer too. Because we're doing those, and granted, you know, it's only five fights, and we're not doing nearly as much coverage. But then we're leaving the next morning and going somewhere. Because this fight week, even though we're just here in California, has felt super freaking long.
Well, it has. These have been long days. Like, again, it does go back to the fact they've been stacking stuff in here. And I mean, like.
And then we had the Journalists Association meeting, which should say that you actually helped document for the other journalists that weren't there that wanted to listen to it and check in on it.
Yeah, so you bet half of them. Heard me mainly on the phone that was in front of me.
We'll say the archive is going to be better. We were producing on the fly. We weren't sure what we were doing.
Yes, it was on the fly. It was kind of thrown together, but that was good. It was good that happened. But yeah, it's just a long week. It has. I mean, we're super close to home, but I feel like we're across the U.S.
Right?
Because I'm just so tired.
That's what I feel like too. All right. Well, listen. As you said, we do need to pack up and get out of here. We fly home in we don't fly home in an hour, but we got to leave for the airport in an hour. So. Sorry that we missed the normal scheduled time, but glad we could get together for a post-fight show. Thank you for sticking it out because a couple hours before we started, you were yelling at me when I was just trying to get help. You angry Kenny was coming straight out. I was just trying to get some advice on some audio. And
nope.
It was one of those moments. All right. Well, listen, it doesn't get any better than that. Appreciate everybody that came in town for UFC 214. There was a pretty strong media contingent. It's always good to catch up with people. We will be at the Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series next week. I will fly down to Mexico. I'm going to pull that one solo. It's not the strongest card in the world. So I'm going to go handle that one by myself. And,
lots of tacos. Have some tacos down
there. I am going to have some tacos. You
El Fogoncito.
El Fogoncito tacos are the jam. So all that is on the horizon. I'll find a way to do a show by myself, or maybe we'll
catch up. I could call in and give some more sexy talk.
I'll be doing that show by myself. All right, we're gonna take a... I was going to say we're going to take a shower, but then that sounds weird.
No, I'm going to
individually,
take one
of those. Yes. We are going.
Yes, yes.
It's time to pack up. We're going crazy.
See? It's all sexy talk getting to you.
Thanks for listening.